5. The Moon City. Now the tongues were broken. The tower was not. That is the sentence this whole telling hangs upon, and it is the sentence men leave out when they tell the tale of Babel to their children, and the leaving of it out is the reason they never understand what happened afterward. The great work stood on that plain, unfinished, with the wind going over it, and the carts went out to the ends of the earth in 100 tongues, and every cart that went out had the tower in it, not the brick of it, the drawing of it. The men of Shinar could no longer say one word to one another, and it did not matter in the least, because they were not carrying a word. They were carrying a shape. The enemy lost his workmen that afternoon, and he did not lose his drawing, and the drawing was all he had ever needed. And wherever they stopped, they built it again. Go and look in any country you can reach. A mountain raised in stages in a flat place, of brick where there is no stone and of stone where there is, with a great ramp or a stair climbing the flank of it, and a house at the summit where the people never go, and a couch in the house, and a table for the gods meet, and a place made ready in the middle of the floor, under 100 names, to 100 gods, in tongues that could not be understood, one street from the next. And the thing that came at last to stand in the place made ready was, in every one of them, one of the ruined ones out of Abaddon. And not one of them was a god. And the men who raised those towers all believed. They had thought of it themselves, and so did their fathers. And the thing they were copying was standing empty on a plain in Shinar, with the mortar gone hard in the buckets. There is the whole doctrine of the Book of the Deep, paid out on the open roads of the world where any man may go and see it. He cannot make. You were told that in the scroll before this one, and you were shown the poisoned well. And here is the same creature with the same two hands, and they are still empty. His one trade is the copy, and the breaking of the tongues did not cost that trade a single day of business. For a lie does not need a common speech. It needs a common longing. And he had put one into the whole race on that plain, and it went out on every road at once. Break a man's words, and he will still build what his neighbor builds. He will still want a god he can keep in a house. He will still want a name that can be seen from a distance. And the ruined ones went out with the carts and sat down in the new countries and waited for the first course of brick to be laid, and nowhere in the whole world did they have to wait long. And we can show you this, and it is not a thing we have out of a book. From the roof of the house where we are set to work, we can count the towers of this plain, and every one of them is that tower. The same stages, the same ramp, the same little house on the top, with its door standing open to the sky. And the traders come up the river and tell us of the towers in their own countries and describe them to us. And every man of them believes he is describing a thing peculiar to his own people. And we sit and listen and say nothing, for we have learned that a captive who talks too much at the wharf does not always come back to his own mat. But we know what they are describing. They are all of them describing one afternoon on this mud, and none of them has ever heard of it. And there is only one drawing in the marchlands, and it is very old, and it was not drawn by a man. Now come south with us, down the two rivers, all the way down to where they lose themselves at last in the marshes and the sea. There stood the city of Ur. It was old before this city was dreamed of. And it was great. Canals and date groves and black soil. The reed boats going up and down. The wharves loaded. The flat white roofs running away to the water in the evening light. We are not going to paint the whole of that city for you here. You will be taken into Ur again by other hands than ours and shown what lay beneath its fine floors and what it cost a man to live there. We have one thing to show you in Ur tonight, and it stands over everything else in it, and you have seen it three times already in this scroll. The enemy had owned that city for ages before ever a voice came into it, and he did not hold it by fear, and he did not hold it by force. He held it by giving the people exactly what they asked for. Over the roofs of Ur, there climbed a great tower of brick, raised in stages, with stairs upon its flanks, and a shrine at the summit. That is the whole description. And you have read it before, and it stood at the foot of this same plain, a few days down the water from where we sit. Mud brick within, burnt brick without, the black pitch for mortar, the ramp, the priests going up in their robes, the room at the top, and in the room, a place made ready. The tongues were broken, and the drawing was not. And whatever it was that went into that room at the head of the ramp in Ur was one of the same crew that went up the inside of the tower on the plain of Shinar. And it had come down the length of this same plain to be worshipped, and it had come at a walk, and it was in no hurry whatever. And the god of that tower was the moon. His name in that country was Nanna, and he was no small false god and no joke, and we should be fools to make him one. He was the supposed lord of that city, and the greatest men in it were his servants, and all the wealth of Ur was counted in his name. Now ask why the moon, of all the things in the sky, and stay with the question, because the answer will teach you more about the ruined ones than 100 pages of denouncing them. The enemy did not put the moon on the top of that tower by accident. The moon is a very good false god to have. It measures. It gives you the month, and the year after it, and the feast days, and the day the rent falls due. And a merchant who lends at interest must have a calendar before he can have a debt. It gives the caravans light to march by in the cool of the night when the sun would have killed them. It is orderly and reliable and beautiful and cold, and it never says anything. There is the whole of it, and we have turned it over by this fire on more nights than we can count, and it is the shrewdest thing the enemy has ever sold to men. A god who never speaks is a god who never interferes. It, or should we say he, for a personage, is the way men would have it, can be feared, which men want, and he can be fed, which men can manage, and he can be consulted by priests who will tell you what he said, for a fee. And what he said will always turn out to be a thing you can live with. He will never call a man out of his own house. He will never tell a man that he is wrong. He will never come down the ramp into the clay pit and stand there in the mud looking at what you are making. The nations have wanted that god since Babel, and they want him in your century. And the ruined ones have supplied him under every name and in every tongue on the top of every tower on the earth. There is one thing in the three worlds they have never been able to supply, and it is a god who speaks first. And in the shadow of that tower, in a house in Ur, there lived a man named Terah, and he served the moon. We do not soften that, and we are not permitted to soften it, for our own record says it in the mouth of the man who brought our fathers into the land we have now lost. Your fathers dwelt on the other side of the flood in old time. Even Terah, the father of Abraham and the father of Nachor, and they served other gods. There it stands, and there is no arguing with it. That house had gods in it. There were little ones on a shelf and in a niche beside the door, baked out of clay, some of them no bigger than a man's hand. And there were charms hung at the throats of the women. And there was a small clay woman buried under the doorstep to keep out whatever it is that comes in the night. That is not a slander upon Terah. It is the furniture of every house in that country, and the record has told us plainly that his was like the rest. The ruined ones have never needed a man to be wicked. They have only ever needed him to be furnished. And now mark what the record does not say, for this is where careless tellers go wrong, and we came within a hair of going wrong ourselves, and one of us said so out loud and was right. It names Terah. It names Nahor. It does not name Abram. Not there and not anywhere. We have gone through the whole of it with the lamp, and he is not in that sentence. So, we will not hang upon that man, an accusation the record declines to make, and we say it as men, who are not in the habit of shielding the great fathers from the truth about themselves, as you have seen already, and will see far worse before this chronicle is done. What we can honestly say is what is written, that he came out of a house that served other gods. Whether he knelt at that shelf as a boy, whether he stood in the crowd on the feast day and watched the priests go up the ramp of the moon with the drums going, and what he was thinking while he watched, none of it is written anywhere. We do not know. It is exactly the thing a man most wants to know, and the record shuts its mouth, and we shut ours. And there is one in the three worlds who would dearly love to have that accusation, for accusing is his trade, and he will run it in either direction, and he is not getting it out of us. And behind the little gods on the shelf, and behind the cold bright one on the top of the tower, stood the ruined ones, and this is the last we shall say of them before the voice comes. They can make nothing. They did not make the moon, and they could not have made it. El Elyon hung it in the sky to give light upon the earth and to mark the seasons for men, and it does its work every night without being asked and without being paid. And it did its work over Ur that night as it does over this canal tonight. So they took a lamp that had been hung up out of pure kindness and got a whole city to kneel to it and charged the city for the privilege. Nothing new was made in Ur, and nothing new could be. A gift was taken, and another name was put upon it, and the men who knelt were sent the bill. And out of that house and out of that city, a road runs north. We must tell you about the road, for it is the strangest thing in this telling, and there is a doctrine lying in the dust of it. You cannot go from Ur to the land of Canaan in a straight line. It looks a simple business on a clear night, with your finger held up against the stars. 700 miles west and a little north, and there you are. But between the one country and the other lies the great waste, and it is a furnace, and there is no water in it, and it does not care who you are or who called you. Men do not cross it. Men have never crossed it. A man who tried it with a family and tents and flocks behind him would be a scatter of bones in it within a fortnight, and the bones would not be found. The Marchlands is a very wide country, and most of it will kill you. So the road does not go that way. The road goes the wrong way. It runs north out of Ur, up alongside the great river, away from Canaan, further from the promise with every step a man takes. 600 miles of it, north and north and north, through the flat country and the barley and the canals, past every city on the plain, until at last the land begins to lift, and the rivers come down out of hills instead of up out of ditches, and the road bends round the top of the world and turns at last toward the west and the south and the sea. It is 1,000 miles and more to go 700. A bird would do it in a day and a half. A man with an old father and a wife and cattle spends the better part of a year upon it, and for the whole first half of that year, every single step he takes is carrying him further from the country he has been told to go to. Set that down, where you will not lose it. The road toward the promise begins by going the wrong way. And that is a thing the enemy has never once been able to say to anybody, and he will not say it to you. He is the merchant of the short road. He has been selling it since the garden, and he has never had another line of goods. The quick way, the straight way, the way a man can see the end of from where he is standing, the strong arm and the reaching hand, and the thing you can do for yourself this afternoon. He will show a man the shortest distance between where he is and what he wants every time, and he will be telling the truth about the distance. He has never in all his ages recommended the long way round to a living soul. He cannot afford to. The long way round is walked by faith, and there is no faith in a straight line across a desert. There is only a man and his own legs and a great many bones. And where the road comes round the top of the crescent, where the highway up from Damascus crosses the great highway that runs from Nineveh over to the river at Carchemish, there stands a city at the meeting of them. The men of that country call it Haran. The word is not a man's name, and it is not a riddle. It means the road. That is all it means. It is their word for a highway, and they called the place after the thing that it is, as a man might name his house the ford, because the whole world goes through it, and nothing in the world stops there. And you must see what kind of a place a road city is, for it explains everything that happened there. Everything in the world comes through it. The wool goes down, and the metal comes up, the blue stone out of the mountains at the end of the earth, and the tin without which there is no bronze, and the timber off the northern hills, and the slaves, and the news. There are inns, and money changers, and men who will sell you a mule, and men who will sell you the mule back next week. There are caravans forming up in the yards before dawn, with the asses stamping in the cold and the drivers cursing in six tongues. And there are the pilgrims. That is the trade of the place. Men come up the roads from every quarter to worship, and they spend money while they are there, and the city grows fat on their coming, and the priests count the takings, and the god says nothing, and everybody is content. A crossroads is a very good place to sit if you are collecting something. And there is one who has been sitting at the crossroads of the world since there were roads, and he takes his toll in a coin that the men paying it never see leave their hands. And there is a tower in that city too, and there is a moon on the top of it. We shall not dress that up for you, and we shall not draw it out. A man may go north, out of the house of the moon, upon the only road there is, through 600 miles of dust and barley and canal water, and come at the end of it to the crossroads of the whole world. And the thing that is waiting for him when he gets there is the one he set out from, with a new set of priests and a new set of drums and the old cold face, and the table already laid and the room already swept. We set that down here, and we leave it lying exactly where it is, and we say no more about it. And you will know, before you are far into the age that follows, why we would not say more. The enemy is not obliged to chase a man who is walking toward him. So, that is the world, as it stood at the end of the age we have been telling you of. And if we have ever let you think otherwise, then we have failed you. It is not a dark wilderness crying out for a light. It is a bright, wealthy, learned, orderly, well-governed world, with law in it and letters in it and beautiful things in it and clever men in it, and it is comfortably owned. There is a tower in every city, and a god in every tower, and a room at the top of every tower, with a place made ready in the middle of the floor. The enemy is not scrabbling at the edges of that world. He is not hiding in the waste places or lurking in the dark, whatever the pictures may tell you. He is sitting in the best room of every capital city on the face of the earth with his feet up, and he has been there so long that nobody remembers a time when he was not, and the men who serve him do not know his name and would be insulted if you told them.